Hello, my name is Lindsay Little, and my favorite thing is monsters.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. This week, I am joined by Lindsay Little. She is a co-host of the podcast Stories to Dismember, a horror movie review, and the author and artist and inker of Oni Girl, which is a webcomic that is coming to life on Kickstarter. Lindsay, how are you doing this morning?
I'm so good. Thank you so much for having me, Leah. This is great.
I'm so happy to actually get to talk to you in with voices.
I know. It doesn't really... this is the first time we've actually communicated this way, but it doesn't really feel like it to me, if that makes sense.
It makes 100% sense. So, Lindsay, you may recognize her voice from the Best of 2022 episode. She left a voicemail for it. But we are members of the Doscord, so we know each other through the Doughboys fan community. So we talk all the time on Discord. We chat. And it does feel like, I mean, those are real friendships. So I'm not even going to say like, oh, it feels like.
Yeah, but of course.
It doesn't feel like, because it feels like it because it is.
And so, we have heard each other's voices. We just haven't heard them directly in the moment.
Yes. We haven't had synchronous.
Yes. Synchronous conversation.
So how is this weekend kicking off for you?
Gosh. Well, yesterday my partner and I got our marriage certificate.
Yay!
So that's one step closer to the real thing.
Yeah.
And for the most part, we just plan on having what we call a nostalgia day, which is when we choose some of our favorite films or video games from childhood, grab some of our favorite snacks from childhood, and we'll literally just spend a majority of the weekend doing those things, having a whole complete marathon of nostalgia.
That's a brilliant idea. I love it.
It's so much fun.
What are some of your go-to snacks for Nostalgia Day?
A grilled cheese is probably one of the more nostalgic snacks for me, or foods, I guess, or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Just really keeping it simple. And as far as like prepackaged foods, Pop-Tarts always come to mind. I feel like Oreos are kind of cheating because those are a classic. I think those will always be popular. Mm-hmm. But I'm very tempted by those very recent, that recent drop of Oreos that has the cookies and cream filling.
Mm-hmm.
Stratton was tempted to buy those when he was at the grocery store earlier. And I wanted to say, oh, get them. But we already had bought so many snacks.
Give in to the temptation, Stratton.
Yes, I know.
I haven't seen the cookies and creams one. I've seen the, is it the super stuff? The ones that are like quadruple stuff that they have out right now that so thick.
They already have really thick ones.
Yeah, there's already double stuff, which is regularly on the market. So I guess the Oreo, one of the main Oreo factories is in Illinois, or used to be in Illinois. So we get all the flavors.
Wow.
All the special Oreo flavors come out in Illinois first. And my sister, when she was at a smaller law firm, would organize tastings anytime she found a new flavor.
Ugh, the dream. So,
right? Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah. So I might have to wander down to CVS and see if we've got the cookies and cream.
It must be good.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it's Oreo, but with more Oreo.
Right. It's like an Oreo with an Oreo filling.
Yes.
Right?
It's a very meta
cookies
Oreo.
And cream just an Oreo?
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Sounds great.
Nice. Yeah, and I hear you on a grilled cheese. That's good nostalgia food.
Mm.
Now, when you're doing a nostalgia grilled cheese, is it like margarine, white bread, like Kraft slices, or do you upgrade it for your adult sensibilities?
It depends if, like, this is specifically a nostalgia day. It probably is more curated. Probably has, like, smoked Gouda on wheat bread and mayonnaise on the inside, because that's how I was taught to do it. Mayonnaise on the inside to make it extra creamy. And then butter on the outside, fried that way on both sides.
Okay.
And then maybe some other stuff, like a blackberry jam to go with, or whatever jam is in the fridge, strawberry jalapeno. But we've had many a grilled cheese in this household.
Yeah. I've never heard the hack of putting mayonnaise on the inside, but as I'm thinking about it, it makes sense that it would just make the cheese meltier.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're using, like, if you're not using Kraft American slices, like, those are made for melting. Mm-hmm, all cheeses aren't. So I could see that mayonnaise also really, a Gouda or a cheddar, giving it a little bit more of that.
More moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh, that's really, and that's a good food hack.
Yeah, and I think you can also fry a grilled cheese just with mayonnaise on the outside instead of butter, but I prefer butter. I'm from the South, so of course I love butter.
Yeah.
So that's how I do it.
Yeah. I typically use country crock for the outside, but that's because I didn't grow up in a butter household. I grew up in a country crock household, and I buy butter now as an adult, and I appreciate it. But it's not enough of part of my life to keep it outside of the fridge, so it's soft enough when I want a grilled cheese. Right? I'm not always, like, mentally my butter isn't always prepared.
Right. That makes little sense.
Yeah. So I just revert to the country crock.
Well, the country crock, country crock is nostalgic for me, too. For some reason, I forgot it existed until you said that, but now I'm just hit with a wave of nostalgia. And if you buy country crock, then you've just got, like, free Tupperware along with your purchase.
Yeah.
Where's
that is... to keep your green beans?
Exactly.
Yeah, and then if there's still a little butter in there, and then you throw the vegetables in while there's still a little country crock, and you get a little extra dressing, great. You know the fancy pastas where they finish it in they've got the big Parmesan that with like a hole in it, and they like put the whole hot pasta in it.
Oh yeah,
to get it coated.
Yeah,
I say that.
I've never
like
done that before, but
one I've done it once.
That's like, sexy.
Yeah, it was a buffet.
That sounds so good.
It was a buffet at a holiday party, and it was the risotto station. They finished the risotto by like just dumping your whole serving into a Parmesan wheel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. For listeners, you can see why our connection is the dough scored, because so far we've talked about Oreos and grilled cheese and pasta and
yes.
I love it.
So, Lindsay, you are in addition to planning your wedding, you are also in the middle. You've got 2 weeks left on your Kickstarter for Oni Girl for the first issue. Now this is an issue that you have fully drawn and written, and the goal of this Kickstarter is to ink it, right? To do the color?
Yes, to do the color for it, because it is fully written and drawn. And you can also read it already if you wanted to. It's on Webtoon. If you just search O-N-I-G-I-R-L, you would be able to find it there to read it for free. And it's already been published in black and white, but it takes so much time to create even a single page of a comic. I used to work on it while I had a full-time job, so I would spend my evenings working on it, and essentially I would end up working about 70 hours a week with the addition of my comic. And it just takes so much time to do. So that's why this Kickstarter exists, so that I can color these pages and make Oni Girl be presented the way that I always really wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
In glorious color. That's literally the title of the Kickstarter.
Yes. Is Oni Girl your first comic character?
It kind of is. When I was a kid, I used to write little comics. But they were little hobbies that I had. I never really stuck with anything. And I, as an artist, I've always, possibly with ADHD, undiagnosed ADHD, I've always had like different projects that I've started and stopped. But this is the only project I've ever had where I've just stuck with it and been totally passionate about. And I could easily just do that for the rest of my life and be happy with it because I enjoy it so much. And it's a comic that is so deeply a part of myself. There's just so many elements in it that draw from my own life and my own experiences that are just so very raw and personal that it just really means so much to me.
Mm-hmm. So on the Kickstarter, you talk about how you first concepted Oni Girl in 2015. But 2021 is when you started publishing the project. How many issues are out on Webtoon so far?
So currently it's up to chapter 4.
Okay.
You can read 4 chapters on Webtoon. And essentially that's also about the equivalent of 4 comic issues.
Okay.
Like the little single floppies. But I already have so much of it written out in my head for future issues.
Nice.
So there will be a conclusion at some point. It just is a matter of when I can do that.
Yes. So we either need... We need people to come and fund this Kickstarter.
Yes.
You are about halfway there. Oh, you're like literally like $12 short of being halfway there. I wish I'd seen that. So you're like 50.01% of the way through your goal. Mm. The goal is $3,000, which as far as Kickstarter goes, is a very reasonable project goal. Like, you know, some people come on and they're like, it's $1 million or it's $500,000. And the goal is so that you can be paid to be an artist. Right?
Yeah,
the goal is.
Because at the moment I work as a freelance illustrator and I do all kinds of things. I work on card games. I've illustrated a lot of card games. I've done some comic work for other people. But to be able to create my own work, it literally does take so much time. And the only way I'm able to create that work is if I have the time and money to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there is an audience for it. I have 6,000 readers on Webtoon.
Mm-hmm.
But Webtoon is a free platform. So it's really a matter of, do people want to see this project to fruition enough that they care to support it or to share it amongst other people that they know who might appreciate it?
Mm-hmm.
So I hope so. It's still a project that I'm going to continue on at some point, whether or not this Kickstarter gets funded. But this Kickstarter being funded will allow me to continue to work on this passion project, but also continue to release those chapters because I want to continue with the plot line from where it was left off. I want to get to chapter 5.
Yeah. It's great. And I hope I have said this explicitly on the podcast, but if I haven't, I believe that artists deserve to be paid for their work. And that's why I think a Kickstarter like this is important because you're saying, I need space to breathe. The only way I can work on my passion project is if I can also, you know, you exist in a capitalist society.
Yeah.
So you and your partner have bills to pay and supplies to buy. And so the only way to be able to continue creating art is to have patrons. And so this is a way that people can come in and support you so you can maybe like dial down the hustle as a freelancer and spend that time that you would be marketing yourself or doing invoices to have some breathing room to make your art. So
absolutely.
I think that is really worthwhile. And people that are listening, you have 2 weeks. It closes on Valentine's Day, right?
Yes.
So you have until...
that, I know that wasn't a threat. You have 2 weeks.
You have 2 weeks, people. Make it your Valentine's gift to me, the host of Finding Favorites, that you will go in and back Oni Girl. So that's that really Lindsay cute. Can have the space, the mental space to work on this project and bring it to color, which will help her get more followers on Webtoons, which will get her the attention of a publisher that will treat her fairly and pay her fairly for her work.
That would be amazing.
So that's the goal. Is that a goal? Like, would you like to be have a publisher and work full-time as a comic book person?
That would be the dream. That would be so ideal. It's very difficult to make it in the comic industry, so I don't even have my expectations that high. That would be lovely, but I'm not getting my hopes up about that. If I just had to essentially be my own publisher and just sort of crowdsource the funds to continually make Oni Girl pages and just have them posted on my own site, I would do that.
Yep.
But if a publisher was ever interested, that would be even better. Because honestly, I can be my own boss and crack the whip on myself, but it's so much more difficult. I'd much rather somebody else do that.
Mm-hmm. I 1,000% understand. So, Lindsay, I know we could talk Oni Girl for the full hour, but we're also here to talk about monsters? Yes. Question mark?
Yes, so it is related in a way, because I don't think it was mentioned, but Oni Girl is about a school full of monsters. Specifically, it's about a school of monster children who go to this school not just to learn the normal subjects that we learn in real life, but also how to assimilate the behavior and appearance of humans so that when they graduate from this school, they can go on to live in human society. Because it takes place in a human-dominated world where people don't believe monsters exist, or the few that do don't want them to exist. Mm-hmm. So you can draw from a lot of parallels in real life with...
It's not subtle.
No. And that's why I love monsters, and that's why I wanted to talk about monsters, because they make for such a good allegory for people who are disenfranchised, anyone who's in the LGBTQ community, person of color, disabled, or differently bodied, I should say, or anyone who's ever just felt like an other. Like, I grew up in a horrible environment for a kid. Like, I grew up in an abusive environment, and I always felt like an other because I was treated so badly. I felt like a monster, basically. And I grew up loving monsters, but it wasn't until an adult that I could appreciate monsters because of that symbolism that they hold so frequently. Mm-hmm. Beauty and the Beast. The Beast is this, he's a character of redemption. Like, he's a monster, essentially, but he redeems himself. He shows that inside, he's more than what his appearance is. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that so much. Phantom of the Opera is a more extreme example of a monster. He literally kills people. But to some degree, you have empathy for him. Mm-hmm. There's just a variety of what a monster is in media. But there's just so many instances of it where you can just appreciate them on that deeper surface level.
Yeah. So you mentioned Beauty and the Beast.
My favorite fairy tale in Disney film.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Was the Beast, when you think of like my first monster, is it the Beast or is it Monsters, Inc. or Frankenstein? Who's your origin story monster?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Are they monsters?
In my heart, I consider them sort of like monsters. They're not monsters in the traditional sense, but okay. They're still an other because they do their best to fight crime, but they still have to live in the sewers away from people. They can't reveal themselves to people. Mm-hmm. So there is that desire to do good, but knowing that they're an other. So I love that. It's just another facet of that whole thing.
In which Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were your first turtles? Were they like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Heroes in a Half Shell? Was it that type of Ninja Turtle, or was it like the grittier comic book, or was it like the live action? Was there a live action movie?
There was, yeah.
A live action movie. So like, what turtles are your turtles?
So I did grow up a little around the cartoon. I think the mm-hmm. cartoon was slightly above, or I think the cartoon was slightly before my time. So I was aware of it and I had seen mm-hmm. some of it. But the movies came out when I was a toddler.
Okay.
And that is what I was obsessed with.
Okay.
And those, I mean, I grew up with the first and the second film. Mm-hmm. And they're more meant for adults, really. There's some cursing and mm-hmm. there's a little bit of adult themes in there. But my dad would get me to sleep by watching those. I was a toddler and he would pop those into the VHS. Yeah. And that's how I would wind down at night until yeah. I went to sleep. And my dad says he has stories of me when I was little, when he would be sleeping in his own room and he would hear me going, "Hiya!" from the living room. Or, "Whoa!"
And, because and they have strangely, that surfer dude. Like, did you ask for pizza for every meal?
Yeah, but I just sort of feel like that's how most people are, right?
It's yeah, no. It is. I think with or without the Ninja Turtles, you want pizza.
The pizza, it does look especially delicious in mm-hmm. any Ninja Turtles adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah. So you start with the Ninja Turtles as your first monster. Is there then one, like, kind of a OG monster for you that more people recognize as monsters?
Godzilla. Godzilla's a yeah. good monster.
And what, again, what, I mean, Godzilla, I think, is, doesn't have a copyright on it, right? So it's like an open, it's not called open source. What's it, what's the copyright word for like any, like Sherlock Holmes now is available to anyone who wants to write Sherlock Holmes stories.
Oh, I'm really not sure about that with Godzilla.
But I get, all I'm trying to say is there's lots of Godzilla stories.
Yeah,
so,
there are.
So what
yeah.
Godzilla, which Godzilla got to you? Got to baby Lindsay?
I don't remember. Somebody could probably correct me on this, but I don't know if it's the original Godzilla, the very first Godzilla in black and white. But that's primarily what I would watch with my little brother. But the Godzilla that I love the most is what my partner Stratton calls the Catmouth Godzilla. Because it's still an early Godzilla, mm-hmm. but he just has these big, bulging eyes. And a literal cat-shaped mouth. And it's to me, is the cutest iteration of Godzilla.
I am just really quickly looking on Google Images. Yes.
I'm gonna...
to see if I can find... All right, let me try classic Godzilla.
If you ever talk to Prince Sloth... I don't usually call him that. That was weird. If you ever talk to Stratton, he would be able to rattle the different Godzillas off to you, because he's the one who really introduced me more into the whole world of Godzilla.
Yeah, it's wild when you just search Godzilla Classic, like just how many versions of Godzilla there have been over the years.
I could just ask him real quick.
Oh, wait. I found USA Today, the 60-year evolution of Godzilla. Catface Godzilla is your favorite, then Godzilla. Was that another one that, like, your family had recorded? You had the tape of it and you would rewatch it, or did you catch it on TV?
Yeah, that was a VHS tape that my brother and I had. We had a few of the Godzillas. Godzilla and King Kong.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that's why I like Godzilla more than King Kong, because he seems more like a monster than King Kong does. Like, King Kong obviously is not a normal gorilla.
Right.
But... he's still just a big gorilla.
He's a big gorilla who, yeah.
So many King Kong fans are going to get mad at me now.
Right, but like his origin story is just like he's a big gorilla that people caught, right? He's not a big gorilla who got... I don't know much about King Kong, but...
That's essentially it, yeah.
Right? He doesn't have like a nuclear meltdown background. He wasn't created in a lab, right?
Right.
It's not like the Planet of the Ape Apes. Who were lab... Well, no, the apes are us. But, like, they come out of a lab. They come out of, like, a failed human experiment on monkeys and gorillas. Versus, I think, King Kong is just, like, big.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But Godzilla is... Is Godzilla a lab creation or... outer space monster?
I think originally he was a dormant creature who... Oh gosh. See, I'm not even an expert enough that I can get my facts straight. Godzilla, a giant monster spawned from the waste of nuclear tests, is discovered in the sea and rises to threaten Japan. And I like this little bit. The only hope of stopping Godzilla is the oxygen destroyer, a weapon as deadly and as morally troubling as the atomic bombs that created the monster. So there's even political commentary when it comes to Godzilla, because that was the whole inspiration for Godzilla.
It's what there's even to like Japan.
Yeah,
like his, America created Godzilla. America, you know, by releasing the nuclear bombs. I know it's not
exactly.
It's a nuclear and that's waste. Why, yeah,
absolutely, and that's the whole reason for Godzilla's skin texture, because it's based on the scars that the Hiroshima victims had. There's just so much. Like you can appreciate monster media at a surface level easily, but when you just get deeper into the reasoning behind them, why they exist, it's just so good. I love being able to connect, I guess, with people on a human level through monsters.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my favorite thing. I'm so glad that we're talking about this
on
this podcast, because I do think that's my favorite thing.
Yeah. If you were Professor Little and you were going to write a syllabus, a monster syllabus, but let's just say it's like a winter term. It's just a 6-week class. So you don't have to do like a full 20-week semester. Let's say you were going to do a 6-week class on monsters. What are some items, movies, books, essays? What are things that go in your curriculum?
Or
ways that you would want people to explore monsters? This can be a comic, this can be an illustration class, this can be a watch and discuss class, it can be whatever you want. But if you had 6 weeks to teach adults about monsters, what are some of the tools, the questions, the activities that you think you would do?
That's really fun. I feel like it would be interesting for people to do a deep dive research into some of the earliest monsters, even maybe biblically, or like from any other culture, really. Just bring out monsters that you don't really hear discussed nowadays, but are still sort of part of the culture. Because even biblically, I think angels are kind of monsters, the way that they're described.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at the same time, when they appear to people and they hide away like their 100 eyes or whatever, they, this is purely from a Christian point of view, I guess. I'm not a Christian, but I used to be. But I feel like that's something that's not really discussed, even amongst Christians. And I think that would be really interesting, is how we have come to accept angels as being these humanoid creatures that are meant to be beautiful and angelic. That's a little too on the nose. But in reality, they were wild. They had 100 eyes, and or they were like shaped like a wheel with 100 eyes and flames, and I don't know, 100 heads. I don't remember it.
Yeah, there's been kind of a funny meme. It's not really a meme going around, but this Halloween, I saw a number of costumes. My friends who have, you know, maybe return to church as adults, but have reconstructed their relationship with Christianity. They're like, oh, well, if you're going to be literal about Leviticus, I'm going to be literal about angels. And a friend who made a costume, she was like, I'm going as what the Bible says an angel is. And so she just had like, I think she bought like a ton of googly eyes.
That is amazing.
You know, and she was, and is it a seraphim? Is that the word?
That is
it. It's a word. Angel, it's a but word I'm not from sure. The Bible.
Seraphim. It is.
Okay.
And there's like, na, 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 cherubim.
Mm-hmm.
Seraphim, yes.
Oh,
but there's four. And it lines up with Jewish tradition, according to this.
Yeah.
Well, point being is that there's some wild stuff, not just in the Bible, but in many other, like, ancient religions with monsters. So it would be interesting not just to draw from that, but also see how they have evolved over time, how we see them in media. Or even newer monsters, like, what are some new monsters that have been invented? The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is certainly one.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's something in there about mutation, because that's what they are. It's literally in the name. They're mutants.
Right. Yeah, and I think you could do... I mean, you could do a whole class called, like, Marvel and Monsters, right?
Because
is that, you know, Groot's the tree,
that's the question,
right?
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Are the Guardians of Galaxies monsters or superheroes?
Oh, my
or
gosh.
Villains?
I'm getting chills because I love this question. And that's kind of a little bit what my comic is about, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the monsters in my story, they can pass for human, or they're right on the edge of passing for human. They just need to figure out what more they can do to safely live amongst humans. And it's kind of ridiculous for my characters, because they, if it weren't for their appearance, they probably could live amongst humans.
Yeah.
But it's just a commentary on our society as well, because we as humans don't always treat each other the way that we should, and it's purely based on superficial things.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely unreasonable.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that makes me think about, you know, I'm on TikTok, and I get a lot of, my algorithm has a lot of content about autism and ADHD, and masking, and people starting to unmask since the pandemic, and trying to be their true selves, and people learning more about stemming and learning more about what their bodies need to stay regulated, and how so much of the last 20 years of pedagogy, or the last 100 years of pedagogy, have been about teaching, forcing children who maybe need a little bit of movement in their life to be still and to suppress that and to keep it inside until they're having meltdowns at the end of the day or when they get home, because they've spent all of their energy trying to keep their autism or ADHD hidden. So that's what it made me, that's what I heard when you said this is a school for monsters to learn how to hide hide their true selves so they can exist in society, in human society.
I love that you said that.
Right, but isn't it also, right, it's white standards of beauty, it's black women having to straighten their hair or have weaves that look like white hair, it's women in India buying skin bleach to appear lighter. So there's just so much, but when you put it, when you put the frame of monster over it, it's a mirror people can look at.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can't quite look at their own society and their own systems yet, but they can look at, they can start by having empathy for the monsters.
Exactly. Totally nailed it.
What response do you have to people who think it's this great gotcha when they're like, haha, Frankenstein's not the monster, he's the doctor. You know, like, we all remember the name Frankenstein, because Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is one of, like, truly one of, other than the Bible, she helps bring us science fiction as a genre.
Yes.
And I think modern monsters. Start, maybe don't start with Mary Shelley, but, you know, Frankenstein's monster. So I just think it's interesting, you know, that we associate the name of the creator with the monster. And not the monster's own name.
Yeah, well, I think it goes to that, the way that different people consume different kinds of media, like what they're getting out of it. Because even with horror films, you have people who appreciate them on a superficial level, who only watch them for the monsters or for the blood or the violence. And on the other hand, you have people who are looking at what these films are actually about. And mm-hmm. usually it's about the human condition. And you can appreciate both, but some people don't even see those underlying themes when it comes to horror movies or monster movies or any kind of media with monsters. And I think it's a missed opportunity to not just understand the media more, whatever it is that you're consuming, but also yourself. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like it's like a great opportunity for growth when you sit down and try to analyze these kinds of things.
Yeah. So in Oni Girl, the students are all monsters. Is it a world where they grew up in monster families and their parents are like, hey, this is just part of it. You're going to have to go to monster school. So that's my first question. And my second question is, are they all the same? Do they all have the same monster traits, or do they go to school and find out what their monster traits are and then get like specialized classes on overcoming that particular monster trait?
I love this question. That's it. I love that so much. So in my world, different monsters come from different upbringings. I have some monsters who have human parents that adopted them mm-hmm. and who have sent them to this school because these parents are not equipped to actually deal with them. And I have human parents who don't want to deal with their monster children and send them mm-hmm. off to this school so somebody else can deal with them. And then I have empathetic human parents who just want to find help for their children. And I have monster parents as well. Mm-hmm. And I just like I like exploring all of the different relationships that can be had mm-hmm. between half monsters who are struggling with their identity, like my main character, my protagonist, and other monsters who can pass very well, mm-hmm. but they let it go to their head a little too much, and they don't accept the privilege that they have. It's sort of like what we were touching on earlier when it comes to people who have like white privilege or mm-hmm. like pretty privilege. Just there are people who will step over others as long as they can succeed in society. So yeah. I really am trying to explore every facet that I can about human society with my monsters. And I forgot what the other question was.
yeah, I should have like not asked them back to back because they're a big meaty question. Do all the kids who come to school have the same monster traits? Like, does everyone have a tail, but some people have a short tail so they can just like, they can wear skinny jeans? I don't know, right? Like, does everybody come with the same monster traits? Is it like a monster spectrum, or is it, oh, there's you're a little bit more of a Frankenstein, you're a little bit more of a Godzilla, you know, like how are, yeah, like what is monster mean, but like, right, so it sounds like it's not
like how do they qualify,
maybe how do they qualify, or like, because like in Monsters, Inc., which is a very mm-hmm. bad example.
No, but it's not a bad example at all.
They have like, the monsters in Monsters, Inc. have all different body types.
Yes.
It sounds like your monsters are maybe it's all different emotional states, but are their bodies, their bodies look like human bodies and they're working on their monster emotional state? Or do they also have like, some of them have like leather print, like leopard spots, and they also need to learn makeup?
This is a great question too. Physically, the monster, there's a very big range with monsters physically as well. The school, of course, is meant for humans, or blah, blah, blah. The school is meant for monsters who have a chance of passing more as humans. But there's also that question of, is that even okay to do?
Yeah.
To just completely wipe away the identity that they have just to be able to survive. There is that question. But putting that aside, they do, for the most part, have more human-like qualities, but then they might have horns sticking out of their head, which my protagonist does, and she hides it with different hats and things.
Okay.
But there's other monsters that have more to hide. I literally have a couple of slime characters in the story. Oh, how do you hide that? And I did introduce a lizard character, like a humanoid lizard type character.
Yeah.
That is basically like an anthro type character where they literally have the skin, the tail, everything that would point to them being a lizard. But I... is it a spoil? I explain how a monster of that degree can still live amongst human society.
Right.
Those are other things that I try to explore in this.
Wow. And is it, where's the boarding school?
So it's a fictional, island. Initially, I had named it Kamishima, but then I learned that that is an actual place, and I didn't want to, appropriate this real place. Yeah. So I renamed it to Yokai Jima, which basically means like Spirit Isle, and that doesn't exist, I don't think. So I think I'm safe.
Okay.
So that is where the school that is where the school is located, and it's very heavily influenced by Japanese culture, and just the appearance and setting of it is very Japanese. But I don't really want to culturally appropriate from anybody. So the world I'm building is sort of a mishmash of different cultures, and even the monsters, I pull them from different kinds of cultures. I have I have a Gorgon type character, so you've got Greek mythology in there. I have lots of Japanese monsters, of course, but I even have a monster that I'm trying to insert into my comic at some point that literally draws from the region I grew up in, which was Appalachia in rural Georgia. The Taily Pole is where that originates from. And I'm trying so hard to find a place where I can insert this type of monster just to have a little bit of my own personal nostalgia inserted in there. So yeah, I do try to have a mishmash of monsters from different cultures in my story. But because it's a modern setting and these are monsters that have evolved over time so that they look more human, it's my way of being respectful of all of these different cultures while also making it my own by saying, well, so much time has passed that these monsters only resemble what they previously were ages ago.
So it's kind of an international boarding school of yes. all these descendants of different classic monsters
mm-hmm.
that were like more identifiable as a, you know, monster.
Yes.
And over time, Monster Society has put together some of these safeguards where it's like, let's get our kids off to boarding school and help them learn to be more human so they can be more successful than we were.
Exactly.
Or the human parents who accidentally adopted a monster. There's a lot there. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
There's so much that to play with in this. There's so mm-hmm. much to talk about.
Mm. Yeah. Do they have movie nights? Like, do you imagine that they watch monster movies or do they watch like fairy tales? And what do they do on their student movie nights? What do you think movies do they watch?
I haven't explored that a whole lot, but I will say the very first chapter of my comic does have repeated references to a game that's very popular amongst the students. And it's essentially, it's a reference to Animal Crossing, which is one mm-hmm. of my favorite video games.
Yep.
But it's called Ghost Town. And in this game, you play as a witch.
Okay.
And you can cast spells and exchange, like, spell ingredients mm-hmm. with other players. And you can create an avatar that looks like a monster. So, in my mind, this is a game that shows representation for these monsters. Like, these monsters appreciate this game, also mm-hmm. on the level of it having monster representation in it. And they can bond with each other over that. And I feel like Animal Crossing in real life is such a good bonding game. It's mm-hmm. it's a game that just facilitates that so well, being able to bond with each other. So I loved the idea of bringing that into my story as well.
Yeah, amazing. So as we start to wrap up, is there anything about monster movie recommendations that you haven't gotten to, that I didn't ask about, that you want to make sure that we talk about?
Ooh. Do you know the actress Kiernan Shipka?
No.
She played Sally in Mad Men.
Oh, right.
The movie that I would recommend is The Black Coat's Daughter. It has Kiernan Shipka in it as the protagonist. And she goes to a boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
But she's awfully lonely. And you could say that there's a monster in the story. I won't get into it too much.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the premise of it so much because it asks the question, how lonely would you have to be able to bond with something evil?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the premise of the movie. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I fell in love with it so hard when I watched it. It's so affecting. And it's beautiful, too. It's a beautiful movie. There's so many beautiful shots in it, and it has this beautiful and eerie, I don't know if you'd say landscape. It takes place in the winter so they're able to do a lot with that kind of imagery. But I highly recommend that one.
Interesting.
Mm.
My friends at Friday Night Movie Podcast just interviewed Rivka Reyes. She was in the cast of School of Rock.
Oh,
and cool. She or they have an upcoming short film called Gianna, which explores the inner saboteur that we have lurking inside of us.
Oh.
I think you would really like it.
Yeah.
And then they also talked about a movie called, it was just at Sundance, called Onyx the Fortuitous and the Talisman of Souls, which I think is comedy horror, but Gianna was written and directed by, written and produced by Rivka Reyes. They brought in another director. But they were talking about when the inner saboteur is embodied. And it sounded fascinating, but also maybe too scary, and maybe I'll never see it.
That sounds really good, though.
Yeah. It seems like Rivka Reyes has a lot of really neat projects coming out.
So, I'll look into those.
Yeah. Well, Lindsay, people can support you with the Kickstarter, which I will link to. Oni Girl, Issue 1 in Glorious Color. Where else can people find you on the internet if you want to be found?
Sure. So on most of my socials, you can find me at lindsay.little. That's lyndsey.little. And you can find me on Instagram and on TikTok. And I'm sure you'll be able to find me on a lot of other social media platforms, but those are the main ones I use. And I will continually post about Oni Girl whenever I have more news there. So those would be the two main places to go to if you want to keep up with Oni Girl.
Awesome. And people can also subscribe to Stories to Dismember, your horror movie review podcast.
Yes.
Which is too scary for me.
Well,
I'm too scared.
It depends on how scared you get. Because we do describe the movies, but we do it in such a silly fashion. Where the three of us are such silly people that I don't know if it would truly scare anybody. Sometimes I'm actually afraid. Are we turning off any listeners who are coming to this for scary content? Because that's not what we provide. But
right,
I know
you review scary movies.
Yes, we recap them, so we'll describe what they are from beginning to end. But we appreciate the films at times. But even with the films we really love, we like to poke fun at them. So there's a lot of that. The cover is going to be misleading because it is scary looking. I designed and drew the cover for our podcast, so when you look at it, you'll think, oh, this isn't, this looks satanic, but it truly isn't how we actually are.
Outstanding. Well, you can listen, obviously, Finding Favorites, you're at the end of the episode, you've listened to it.
Congrats!
But you can follow.
You did it!
You did it! Smash that subscribe button. Please rate and review on either Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Good Pods, whatever podcatcher you're using. Please go leave 5 stars and hit the link. Go over to Kickstarter and support Lindsay's effort to be paid as an artist and bring glorious color to her comic. And keep enjoying your favorite things.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.